Viva o futuro da energia hoje. Para evoluir, é preciso mudar. Para mudar, é preciso repensar. A Reenergisa convida você a repensar a energia para ser mais sustentável, eficiente e, ao mesmo tempo, mais econômica. Viva um novo jeito de consumir a energia. Repense. Descubra a Reenergisa. Todas as soluções em energia, em um só lugar. Acesse reenergisa.com.br.
You know, I don't speak about the pros and cons of moving to another country very often, but I know it's a big concern for many in our community. And I'm proud to say I've even helped a few Canadians expat to the wilds of Florida. So when I was recently a guest on the Expat Money Show with Mikhail Thorup, we had a great talk about this. It's episode 252 if you want to listen to it. Mikhail impressed me with his passion for freedom and finding a better way in this crazy world. Now, he hosts an annual event in October called the Expat Money Summit and invited me to speak at the event. And I'm happy to say that I agreed. So you can pencil that in. Over 7,000 people took part in last year's summit. It covers things like how to move abroad and how to legally reduce your tax bill. And they have a great lineup of other speakers, including Dr. Ron Paul, Doug Casey, Dr. Mark Faber, Peter Schiff, and one of my personal favorites, Jim Rogers, as well as experts in other fields like international law, foreign real estate, banking, and precious metal storage. Events like these, I think, are great opportunities to connect with others who have already made the leap and network for the future with like-minded folks. And this is the largest offshore event in the world today. So if you're intrigued, go to expatmoneysummit.com for details and reserve your free ticket. This year's summit will run from October 2nd through October 6th. You can use my affiliate link when you sign up. See the show notes for all the links. Okay, now on with this episode. Hello and welcome to the Gold, Goats, and Guns podcast. My name is Tom Luongo and we have a lot to talk about. It is episode 154 and I have with me today one of my favorite guys in like the whole business at this point. Vince Lanchi is with me again. He was here earlier and I cannot remember the episode name, episode number, and I'll just have it in the show notes. You'll get over it. And Vince and I, it's funny, I've been meaning to have Vince on back on for a while now, and I know that I went like an entire month without doing a podcast, and it was kind of, I was just so busy. But I thought about it the entire time. I'm like, well, I can always call Vince up. I know Vince is always ready for a podcast. I wasn't ready to actually publish one. It's really just terrible, Vince. But Vince is here today because the other day he blew my mind, and y'all know that's rare. That he blew my mind with some stuff that was going on in the gold markets and his, right, and a very, very simple and direct kind of 5 minutes he did on Twitter was like lightning. And it was funny. I didn't even like listen to it up front. I was watching the conversation. I'm like, I am so in a different headspace. I don't have time for this. And then I listened to it. I'm like, yeah, but you better get in the headspace of it, dude. So Vince, thanks for being here tonight. Thanks for doing this. How you been?
I'm doing good. And you didn't do a podcast for a month?
Yeah, for an entire month.
Oh, no wonder I was so bored. I was watching reruns of Gilligan's Island. Okay. So, I mean, it's good to see you. And we've been talking about so many things. And if we're having a conversation, I know that when we talk off the air, if we're talking geopolitics, you're throwing something out there. I'm absorbing it. And I'm trying to throw some information back. When we talk metals, which is, you know, a narrow, narrow niche and market structure, like with what's going on in China now, we talk on equal terms. So I'm happy to do
this. I'm going to stop you there for a second.
Sure.
We don't talk on equal terms. I LARP is being able to talk on equal terms on this. I know you know the stuff better than I do, which is why I have you on, FYI.
Well, that's, I appreciate that. And I'm just being falsely modest. The bottom line is, I've been studying that shit for fucking 20 years, excuse my French. And so when this happens on Twitter, like we saw, you know, people will say to me, how did you throw out 5 minutes extemporaneously, you know, without even stuttering over? And I'm like, because I've been fucking studying it since like 1998. And it's just like, oh, pieces are falling together now. So, you know, when you're talking to a guy about sandwich making and he makes sandwiches, you know, he can tell you about it.
Right. So What Vince was talking about the other day was something that was very interesting. And it was a mutual friend of ours on Twitter, Eric Jung, was talking about this as well, and the guys were going back and forth on this, which is that there's something weird happening in the gold market. Now, you know, I've listened to a billion podcasts over the last 15, 18 years about, oh my God, gold, you know, the cash price and the futures price are decoupling and all sorts of weird stuff and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, we get into the doom porn and the world is ending and everything. And then nothing happens and everybody gets really, really sad because, well, you know, there are punters out there that need to sell newsletters. And,
incidentally, and my URL is, no, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Exactly. Yeah. Welcome to the Gold Goats and Guns podcast. Right. So the point being is that what Vince was talking about the other day and was really interesting is that they both noticed is that there's a persistent decoupling of the price of gold in Shanghai versus that of the COMEX. And I want to start there because it was one thing for you to do that in a disposable medium like Twitter. Podcast like this is a much more durable, I hope.
No, this is not disposable at all. I'll be giving this to my kids.
Oh, well, there's that. I mean,
no, it's permanent.
Oh,
it's
this podcast, I certainly hope so. Now that's high praise, but you know, between two paisans, like what do you expect?
Exactly. So
do me a favor, because what you posted up on Twitter was fascinating, was awesome, which is that, why is it? Because, I mean, we're all supposed to believe in an efficient market hypothesis and arbitrage is supposed to be ground out and all the rest of this stuff. Why is this happening? Why is this now persistent? As a matter of fact, it keeps growing from what I can understand over the course of the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Geez, there's a background and a background of a background, but you remember, and your audience may remember as well, but the last time we talked about exchanges, as part of a supply chain, slowly moving east or slowly moving to where the demand is, right? And one of the things that the United States enjoys is pricing power. That's the dollar. It's also the fact that commodities are priced in dollars, and therefore that price is used for international deals, or at least benchmarked for use in indexes, especially in oil for international deals. And as the supply chains have moved east, you know, first the demand went east, then the vaults went east, then the sales went east. And this is what you and I talked about before. Eventually, the pricing power goes east. So that's the background. What's happened, just to factually what's happened over the last, say, 2 weeks, right? Over the last 2 weeks, the bubble that we live in, not necessarily the general public, but the bubble that we live in has noticed the repeated the consistent, persistent, and growing spread between Shanghai futures and gold and silver. We'll just stay with gold for now, with gold and COMEX. And the divergence in price has gotten to levels probably not seen before in a long time. And that's the first thing. So the magnitude of the spread has increased. The second part of it is the persistence of it has increased. And the third part of it is, this is the other new part. The price has remained more public than usual. We didn't talk about Shanghai 5 years ago. We didn't talk about Shanghai 10 years ago. We're talking about it now because that's where there's business going over there. And so when as we're about to get into this discussion about what's the right price, why is it happening, will it stop? I want to just give one solid answer from a trader to a trader or a market person looking at this as to, I need to put a pin in this. The right price is the exchange that has the most volume, period. End of story. Yes. Right? Right, yes. Exactly. So, right. And it's not like they hit a switch and Shanghai's the better price. It's over time and over years, the volume shrinks on COMEX, the metal shrinks on COMEX, it grows in Shanghai, it grows in their vaults, and there you have it. That because eventually Shanghai becomes, not necessarily, but probably, Shanghai becomes the benchmark and everything else trades around it. And that's what we're looking at right now, very slow, long, painful for Americans process of the pricing mechanism migrating to where the actual demand is. So that's the bottom line, right? So where do we go from there?
Right. Well, let's just think of it this way, just to remind everybody else, like think about it, right? It used to be London. Then it moved to Chicago. Now it's moving east to Shanghai. And that's the interesting part about this. This is part of that process of the markets becoming more moving from place to place. So, you know, and it follows the same pattern that we saw when it moved from London to New York / Chicago, and now it's moving, and now it's moving to Shanghai. And the interesting part about this is that, look, it's not just that Shanghai. You've got Dubai, you've got Singapore. Mm-hmm. Yeah, remember, Zurich is still a player in this this conversation as well. So now we're talking, you know, off the top of our heads, and I'm sure that there are other markets. The Russians are eventually going to open up their own gold exchange because they would be dumb not to. Now we're talking 7, 8, 9, 10, 12. You know, by the time we're done, there's going to be 20.
Yeah, it's and eventually they'll consolidate again. But that's what you're describing is a manifestation of the world no longer being globalized. Mm-hmm. The center hub is like what Pozar will say, multipolarity. This is a function of multipolarity. And there may not be a dominant player, but let's assume for this conversation that there'll be regional dominant players.
Absolutely.
And the regional dominant player in the West, at least on our half of the Atlantic, will be the COMEX. And the regional dominant player, just for this conversation, and we know it can change, in the East will be the Shanghai Futures Exchange. And there are reasons that will stay, but that's not the point right now. I think the next step we have to say is to address it, you know, before we get, you know, ethereal about it. Why is the spread different right now? Mm-hmm. And that's the root of the question. And the reason I think that's an important question to address, aside from it just being smart, is because there are people out there that say people out there that are saying the price in Shanghai is higher because there's more demand there. Fine. That doesn't address the whole thing. And then there are people out there are saying the price in Shanghai is manipulated. That demand is not really there. They're not allowed to buy the gold. There's a restriction on imports. Mm-hmm. Both of those things have nothing to do with each other. But they do affect price. And I have an answer to both of those comments that dovetails nicely. And we can talk about that now. It has to do with China.
Right. Right. Well, the basic thing, let's remind everybody, like, because we're sagbagging you folks. We already know the answer to all this because we've already talked about it because Vince already put it out in 5 minutes, but we're trying to walk you through it step by step so that you understand the whole process. Look, the COMEX doesn't operate the same way that Shanghai does. And we've all known, and anybody who's been around the gold market for the last 10, 12 years since the Xi-Fi contract went live, knows this, which is that Koos Jansen and Bullion Star has been talking about this forever and a day. I mean, this stuff goes way back to when I had hair, and which is that I never really had hair. We all know this. So, which is that the gold that Shanghai is a purely physical centered, settled contract.
Right.
One, and two, the gold doesn't leave China.
Right. This is
the key to understanding where we're going to go with this conversation.
Right. That's the punchline. Yeah.
Because it's really the important point here, which is that we know that the gold doesn't leave China. Jim Rickards is pounding his shoe on the table like Khrushchev for 20 years, saying China owns more gold than their official central bank reserves because they've been mining 450 tons a year for God knows how long, and none of it leaves the country. Does it, you know, who owns this gold? Well, clearly they've been mining gold out of China for thousands of years. There's more than 1,200 tons in the PBOC.
Right.
It's probably like, we all know this. It's just the question is when are they going to get, you know, when are they going to get real with this? And that's not going to happen until it's to their advantage to do so. And until the negotiations and relations between East and West break down to the point where they're irrevocable. We're not at that stage. So now, knowing that, now let's talk about what's happening on the COMEX.
Okay. So picking up your point about gold in China doesn't leave China. That people need to understand that. And the corollary to that is first of all, because we need to talk about China capital controls and COMEX manipulation, for lack of a better word, management. So the gold in China that enters China does not leave China. China is a buyer and importer of gold. They want the gold. They need the gold even more than what they have that they're lying about. We know they're lying, right? And they want and need this, my opinion, but it's probably right, because they need gold as a alternative to the dollar to settle international trade, especially in their region. Okay, so whether it's gold that we're changing hands on for oil, or yuan, or you know widgets, who cares? But gold is the ultimate backstop, kind of like the Exeter's pyramid. All right, so the first thing I want to say is, to say that China, this is going back to the whole price differential, to say that China is restricting imports into China of gold is on the surface ridiculous in the big picture. Now, in the small picture, as a function of capital controls, they may be doing that. Now, on the FT wrote something about this. Now, I don't know the details of the gold, but I know the details of the FX. So, for example, gold, as important it is to me and you and our little, you know, incestuous bubble, it's not that important right now to China. They have an economy that's potentially imploding. Yes, they're going to keep buying gold. They're buying it hand over fist. And by the way, the price that China's CCP buys at is not the price that's on the Shanghai Exchange. They're doing private deals with JP Morgan all over the world, and they're basically buying all the gold they can from anyone who's willing to sell it. And it's probably at a lower price than what Shanghai is broadcasting. The Shanghai price is for domestic consumption. So here's where the capital controls come in. In the West, if gold gets too overbought, we raise margin requirements. If it gets too weak, we lower margin requirements. That's not capital controls in and of itself, but it has a similar effect. So in China, zooming out to their bigger picture, I don't know if China is restricting import of gold right now. They may not have to do that. If I'm a Chinese person, a citizen who wants to buy gold, I need to convert yuan into dollars because I'm buying dollar denominated gold coming in, right? But you can't, because China imports so much of its gold now, you've cut off the American gold. Now, how have you cut it off? Well, they cut it off through capital controls. The capital controls say, right now in China, for whatever reason, I don't understand their calculus, but for whatever reason, they don't want the renminbi, the yuan, to get too weak. And so to prevent that from happening, they're restricting, using capital controls, the FX market. Right. They're prohibiting transfers of yuan into dollars. If you don't transfer yuan into dollars, you're not buying gold, you're not buying Lee jeans, you're not buying Levi jeans, you're not buying Starbucks milkshakes, you know, on Madison Avenue. You're not buying those things. Now, the demand for gold in China hasn't gone away. They still want it. They're not looking at it like, oh, I can't change into dollars. They're just like, I want to buy it in yuan right here. But the guy who imports the gold into China to put it on the Shanghai Exchange buys it in dollars and needs to convert. He needs to convert yuan to dollars and buy it. So what happens is you have the demand that's still there. Let's say it's normal demand. It's not, but let's say it's the normal demand. And for a temporary reason, gold is de facto restricted from being imported because you can't convert the yuan into dollars. Now, they may also be prohibiting import. I don't see that, but let's assume that they are. That's not their policy in the long run. They're trying to get their economy out of the shitter. You know, they're not worried about the price of gold. It's $100 more. China's like really trying to ruin America. No, they need to get their economy out of a hole.
Right.
And so that's the short-term reason why the price of gold in Shanghai is higher than in COMEX. And by the way, everyone's talking about it now. It's been going on for a decade.
Right.
It goes up, it goes down. Sometimes it's negative, sometimes it's positive. So why are we all talking about it now? Because the American vaults are emptying. That's the difference. So capital controls may be artificially raising the price by $50 or $100 in China for a week, a month, but it'll go back down. But the point is, the prices will converge at a higher and higher level over time because they're buying our gold. That's what's going on.
So this is the point. And the because the demand for gold is actually far higher than the price that we're actually clearing it at this moment in time, because there are other reasons internally. And this gets internally within the United States. We don't want the price of gold to rise too high. But at the same time, as I said earlier, the Chinese are really happy to continue buying gold at less than $2,000 an ounce, just like the Russians are happy to buy it less than $2,000 an ounce. Every central bank that's out there buying right now is happy to continue doing this. And so, you know, it's in effect what we're doing. And I hate to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway because I'm that kind of asshole. Oh, by the way, gold bugs. Right. Yeah, the central banks don't want the price of gold to rise. It's not because it's making their currencies look bad. Right. It's because they want to buy as much of it as they
still buying it.
Right. It's not tough. Now, the Fed, on the other hand, has, you know, they still have somewhat of a vested interest to keep gold under control.
Yes.
But here's the thing. And again, this gets back to what you were talking about the other day on Twitter, which is that, okay, so the gold we've established, the gold's not leaving Shanghai, that's mined in China. It just gets distributed around. It doesn't leave. Right. Anybody who speculates on oil in Shanghai can tie their profits to gold and get it out of the country by trading it across the barrier from Shanghai into Hong Kong, because they can head.
But not easy. They can do it.
Futures contract. Easy. But they're only going to get settled in dollars over in Hong Kong. They're not going to get gold. They're going to get oil converted to gold temporarily, and then from there, you convert it into whatever currency they want: Hong Kong dollars, yen, yen, Aussies, loonies, whatever, dollars, whatever. Right? That's been going on for a long time, and this brings me back to something Martin Armstrong has said for years, which is that, you know, he advised Shanghai when they first opened the oil contract and they were designing it. He said, make sure there's a mechanism to tie it to gold, because that will give de-risk the contract for speculators to come in and book their profits and not be stuck with onshore yuan that they can't do anything with. Right. And so that's why this system is in place. Literally, if you believe Martin Armstrong, which I don't have any reason to doubt him on this one, because that's his business. That's his superpower, folks. Mm-hmm. It's in my mind, it's not Socrates. That's his superpower, is that he's been in the room with all these people. Right. And remember also, bringing up Martin Armstrong, and we start talking about the re-regionalization of gold and all these re-regionalization of gold markets. Who was it that originally opened up the original gold ARB fund during the establishment of the dollar reserve standard after the breakdown of Bretton Woods? Who was making a market in New York and London and Hong Kong?
Well, was he Japan then?
It was Martin Armstrong. That's how he built Princeton Economics. He built it on ARB and gold around the world.
Right. Like,
so if anybody understands this market, we have to give Martin his due here, because the reverse is what's happening now. We're going back to an age where we're going. So Martin was instrumental in globalizing the gold trade. Right. Doing away with all of the regional arbitrage and breaking down the fiefdoms that existed in New York.
Let me interrupt you 1 second. Problem. The Martin Armstrong angle is, when Martin did what he did, he was doing it as globalism was ascending.
Yes.
So as it was breaking out, he was taking advantage of an ARB that was opening up more.
Yes.
Now the ARB is breaking down.
Right. Exactly. Now the ARB is reversing itself. And now we're dealing with, now the big question is why, right? We've been talking about deglobalization. We've been talking about de-dollarization since COVID, right? This is another manifestation of it, but it's a very, very important one, because now it's a matter of, it's the way you were explaining it the other day. We're moving away from globalism back to mercantilism.
Right.
Protection tariffs, capital controls, and a weak currency while the gold stays behind the military might, effectively, the domestic military might of the country that owns the gold. It's not that tough.
We ring fence our own natural resources and try and sell finished products. Mm-hmm. And that's the essence of the mercantile model. And I bring that up a lot, and that's like a pet thing of mine, mercantilism. And that's the funny thing is, I just want to mention this because I haven't mentioned this anywhere. Why do I know, let's assume that I do know so much about mercantilism? because my first trading job was in the New York Mercantile Exchange. So I picked up an encyclopedia and I went online and I looked up what mercantilism is. And right. So I thought I'd be asked that question at work. Like, you know, like you're a kid, you're like, I don't know. You just research everything, you know. Well, right. There's the New York Mercantile Exchange. There's the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Well, what's mercantile mean, Daddy?
Right.
Look it up, kid, you know. And that's why I became educated for it. So this is like my 30-year chance to shine, you know.
Right. This is, I've been waiting for this moment. Mr. DeVille, I'm ready for my close-up, you know what I mean?
I knew this would come in handy someday, Dad, you know.
I'm ready for my close-up. So it's hilarious, dude. So this is the funny part about it. So we're if you can follow what we're saying now, is we don't break down into, you know, being silly, which is that China's already started this process when they created the gold Shanghai futures contract and only settled in physical. Now, the caveat to this, of course, is that the COMEX is supposed to be settled in physical, but yeah, we all know that it's not.
Right,
we know
that's it.
And that's the case. And anytime the COMEX gets into trouble, they force majeure out anybody standing for delivery that they don't want to stand for delivery. Right. They hand them dollars and they go, shut up. And if you say anything, we'll remand you to Guantanamo.
Right. We're doing the same thing they're doing.
Right.
We're just wrapping it in different paper. So, and I want to address that because
this is really important.
I don't think people understand this. China uses capital. Right, just to touch on the mercantilism thing here. We're not going to call it mercantilism, even though that's what it is. We'll talk about it in something that everyone sees because it's been talked about to death. After COVID, after sanctions, after the Ukraine war, after us seizing Russian money, supply chains broke down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not to be pedantic about it, but supply chains are the things that get it from the ground to the table as a finished product. That means for gold, it means mine it, filter it, refine it, assay it, fabricate it, ship it, sell it, store it. That's it. That's like you're consuming gold, right? Okay. Well, the supply chains, as you and I have discussed before, and I won't beat a dead horse, over the last 10 years, pieces of it have been moving to China. The demand is there, the vault is there, the salesman is there, but the pricing is still here, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And the vaulted gold and silver are still here, which is what we're going to get to. So now you have a rising exchange over there, and you have an exchange over here that's diminishing, but still extremely powerful. All right. So in China, they'll use capital. So that's what happened, right? So in China, they'll use capital control. They'll use, I'm going to be very American jingoistic here. They'll use communism and they'll use bullying and they'll use all those evil price fixing things to keep the gold here and to tell their people what to do. And their people will listen because they're enslaved. Okay. Now I'm going to put it in a normal way. You know what? Chinese people are beginning to trust their government, that they have their best interest at heart, and they will do what their government says because their government has a contract with them to take care of them. So If China says buy gold, they'll be like, okay, we'll buy gold. I'm exaggerating, but you know, it's kind of like that. If China says the gold doesn't leave China when it comes in, they're like, okay, fine. You know, I'm sure the rich guys are doing it, but most citizens, the plebs, listen. And so China starts with an authoritarian capitalism and says, no, the gold's not going anywhere. It stays here. You guys on board? Yes, to take their gold out, to use it as an exchange. So what do we do? What do we do? And this is getting right to your point. We don't use capital controls. We don't forbid export. We're a democracy. We throttle. We do know your customer. Like, for example, let's use me, all right? I used to do TOCOM COMEX arbitrage. I would sell on TOCOM when it got too expensive, buy it on COMEX, and in a day or two, the arbitrage, and I would just do a yen-dollar swap, and the price would reconverge, okay? And the price reconverged rather quickly simply because there were other people doing it, and I was just faster for smaller amounts. And the financial world will just snap it back into place. Well, now so we're using the China, the Japan-US example for me. Now the spread gets wider and persists. And so 30 days go by and I'm like, well, I still want to do this. I'll just make delivery. So I take delivery on the COMEX and I send it over to TOCOM. But now let's say Japan and the United States aren't buddies anymore. So they're cracking down on COMEX gold. They're protecting their own natural resources. They're ring-fencing their own supply. And they say to me, they do several things. They say to me, Vince, you don't have a license for that. Sorry, you can't take delivery. And I go, oh, okay, well, who can be my broker that can do that? Well, JP Morgan can, mm-hmm. right? JP Morgan. So this is why the word mercantile matters. The merchant banks were banks for merchants. The merchants could do business internationally. The banks did it for them. The merchant banks are now the commercial banks, the big bullion banks. They can operate in China and the US. If I want gold to leave the US and go to China for my arbitrage, let's say, JP Morgan's got to be able to say yes or no to it.
Yep.
Now, the government says yes or no to it. So eventually what happens is, before the government wised up, India, China were just fucking taking gold and silver out of our vault, just taking it out, right? Especially mm-hmm. India with silver last year. Just like they were taking it. And you know, like, it's not coming out of COMEX, it's coming out of London. Yeah, and London's getting it from COMEX. And it's a hide the pee game, right? Right. So the United States says, we're a free market. We don't manipulate prices. No, they manipulate market structure. And they say, you can't, the gold can leave the United States, but it has to be through these approved routes. And they just basically bury you in bureaucracy and you can't do it. So now the exchange, now we get to your point about the exchange and metal. So now you've got China's, let's just call it incessant demand, right? China, let's just say China, every time they open their mouth, they're buying, right? And the US, every time they open their, every other time we open our mouths, we're buying, the other time we're selling. Well, JP Morgan's there and other banks. I'm not singling out JP Morgan, they're just the easiest to understand. JP Morgan's there to buy it every time you want to sell. And then they sell it to China off exchange, but they can't take it out of the COMEX anymore. So now they're going to miners. The COMEX represents the above ground supply. And as that depletes, now you're looking for scrap. JP Morgan's got a connection to scrap. You go to miners and say, sell me your production directly. And that's going overseas with the blessing of the United States. But at some point, the United States says to JP Morgan, I can't prove this, but this is what's going on. It's like, you know what? We're your customer too. For every 10 ounces you buy, we want 8 of them. And so they become the customer. And that's what happens. So eventually, little by little, the COMEX goes to zero. The Shanghai vault, you would think, goes to infinity, but it doesn't. And this is where your point about no gold leaving. They let the gold come out of Shanghai and go to the companies. The companies don't leave the country because the companies are owned by the government. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening with my friend Bai, Zhao Jun, who was on that thread that you probably saw. He has made it clear to me that when the gold leaves the Shanghai Exchange, or silver, more silver, when the silver leaves the Shanghai Exchange, it goes to one vault. It's one guy buying it. It's the biggest silver solar manufacturer, and they're just taking all the silver. And you know who's telling them to buy it? The fucking government.
The big point is this, because the thing that's been floating around, it was floating around my community for a while, and it's been floating around, you know, the whole gold community space for a while, which is, why is JP Morgan now the sole custodian for SLB and GLD?
Oh, I love that shit.
And now, right? And now, you know, this is the thing I saw, I heard from you the other day it all clicked into place, which is that GLD and SLV, you and I can't get gold and silver out of GLD and SLV. So while the COMEX still has the imprimatur of saying, yeah, some gold can leave the exchange and some people can stamp for delivery, and they're not gonna do away. What they're doing is literally transferring off of the COMEX all of the gold that's on the COMEX to GLD and SLV, which will then operate exactly like the Shanghai Exchange in reverse. You can trade gold and silver all day long. You can get settled in dollars. You can buy and sell the shares of the ETF, but you can't stand for delivery, because the only people who are allowed to stand for delivery are the bullion banks and the primary dealers.
Or
effectively agents of the government at this level. So. Yeah. This is what's happening. We just do it differently, but it's that piece of information, which is clearly happening,
Right.
Is the key to understanding that, yes, indeed, Virginia, there isn't a Santa Claus. There isn't more gold than we think there is. There isn't missing anything. It's just not going to leave. And the U.S. government / the Federal Reserve understands the importance of gold. And or putting the rest, the famous quote from Ben Bernanke when asked by Ron Paul, why do we keep gold still on the Fed keeps gold on its balance sheet? Right. And Ben Bernanke says, tradition?
Right.
Like he's doing his best Paul Krugman imitation there or whatever. And it was just hilarious. And Ron Paul just kind of looked at him and went, come on, dude, seriously. It's not tradition. It's
right.
That's where we are. This is the money shot, folks. Understand that the end of globalization is happening. And it's far more than just chips, solar panels, oil. It is
cigars in Cuba.
Cigars in Cuba or whatever. Right. This is real. And it's not just about what we're restricting the Russians are allowed to buy through European partners and, you know, in order to make, advanced weaponry that they use against the Ukrainians. This is about the fundamentals of the global monetary system are changing. And when we say it is becoming a multipolar world, this is exactly what we're talking about. And now we have evidence that the United States is playing that same game. So now the question I have for you, Vince, is the following. We've established all this, and this is part of the reason why I wanted to have
you on. To circle back on the JP Morgan GLD thing, because
sure, when we absolutely
you
have
ripped through.
Why don't
that.
We do that first, and then I'll leave you, and then I'll bring.
As long as you know your question, you have to write it down.
Oh, I know. I'm going to write it down right now, as we talked about before we went on the live. That I don't normally do that, and I'm going to write this down.
Okay, this applies to every bank, but we're going to single out JP Morgan here as a bank that's trusted and protected by the United States. JP Morgan goes under. You're looking at the Fed possibly going under. That's right. How intertwined they are.
Yep.
Okay. If you look at it chronologically over the last year and a half, first Basel III gets okayed a year and a half ago, and then it gets delayed and delayed and delayed, and finally in 22, it gets passed. Soon thereafter, that's a European thing. It does affect us, but it's European. And you know more about how this translates than I do. JP Morgan, 6 months later, announces that they're taking all of their derivatives book that was in the FX section that's gold related, and they're showing it to us in gold. All of a sudden, these are dots that you need to fucking connect. Basel III gets passed. JP Morgan admits, not that they were guilty of anything, admits that they were carrying all their gold derivatives book, which is 90% of the gold derivatives market in the U.S. on COMEX. They were carrying it in their FX book. So it looks like a pimple in the FX book. But when you bring it out and you put it in the, it's like the big orange bar that goes to the ceiling that I put it in. We saw that graph, right? Okay. Yep. So that's the second thing. So we've got Basel III, JP Morgan. The convictions for the bad traders are handed down. Boom. That's the second thing, right? The third thing. And now you've got the convictions are done. We've got all the dirty laundry out. Now it's like, hey, JP Morgan, you're ready to be the GLD custodian. And they become the GLD custodian. Why is this significant? Now, this is all that's happened. From here on in, this is my opinion, which you happen to agree with. So you're as either smart or as dumb as I am, but it goes like this. Forget about China. Forget about everyone there taking our gold. The U.S. is protecting it as well. They're a free market, though. They just do things a little bit quieter. So they say to JP Morgan, you're now the custodian of GLD. Now, I believe strongly in this. The U.S. is supporting GLD. They're not going to let it go under. GLD will become the sole, except for a direct bond from the government, the sole way that you can invest in gold. Why? Because if you're a domestic U.S. boomer investing in GLD, they know where it is. You're not getting the gold. It's tracking gold because it's there. They trust JPM who's running it. And why do they trust JPM? Because JPM has their fingers in every gold market in the world. So if they need to bring gold in, they can do that. So now you've got JP Morgan custodian of GLD. And now you say, where are our leaky holes? Where are our holes where gold can leave the country? Kind of like the gold window, right? Mm-hmm. Well, it's COMEX. What metal is on the COMEX that's unclaimed? Let's say Buffett's got $1 billion in gold in a COMEX. Let's just say he doesn't, but let's just say he does, right?
Right.
I know Paul Tudor Jones. I know Bill Gates used to keep silver on the COMEX.
Right.
And when they wanted to squeeze, they would say, we're not leasing it out. We're taking delivery today. They would do that. That's how it happened. That's one of the games they would play. So now it's like, okay, China wants the gold. You want to make sure, and I'm not saying he's doing this. You want to make sure Bill Gates doesn't sell his silver to China. You want to make sure it doesn't axe. You want to close every, you want to make it Fortress America for natural resources. Mm-hmm. We can't prevent people from buying our gold. Look, for example, like every other country is protecting the natural resources. Africa, Ghana says, you got to pay us in gold directly now. We want to nationalize some of our gold. South America, we're going on strike against Newmont because we need to be paid more for our silver. You know, the BRICS, we're not exporting lithium to you anymore until you give us some technology to build lithium batteries. The U.S., what's the U.S. doing? Nothing. They're not doing nothing.
Of course not.
They're not doing nothing. They're going like this. Let's take the gold and silver that's in COMEX that is in a global entity, ostensibly global entity, and let's take it out of the CFTC and put in the SEC. You've got to protect your supply. And that's what JP Morgan is doing. So rest assured, the United States of America government is in the market buying silver and gold in addition to protecting what they have by emptying the COMEX. Did I touch on it right?
Yeah, you got it. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Okay, cool.
Because that's what you said the other day, and I was like, oh, holy shit, yeah, that makes perfect sense. So understand, folks, everybody's doing it. Now, you can do this with gold because it's not industrially an important metal whose supply and demand needs to be coordinated through time, which is what futures are actually for. Commodity futures have gotten a very bad rap, especially in the gold community, because paper gold has been a tool of suppression. So has GLD and all the washing between the LBMA and all that stuff, which you know far better than I do. That's where my LARP ends, folks. That's where I say, Vince, explain the mechanisms about how they vol wash gold and wipe you all out, because he's been wiped out probably by these people a dozen times.
Exactly.
Right. So, whereas I just don't play, and I just like, oh, they wiped them out, and then I make an order at Atmex and I buy 5 ounces, and then we walk away, right? So the situation is incredibly important to understand. The COMEX as an exchange cannot end.
There you go.
We need to have the COMEX doing its job of coordinating price, supply, and time of every industrial metal.
Right.
Problem is going to be silver. Because industrial metal, not a monetary metal, but it's also now the most important industrial metal. Far more than palladium, far more than platinum, far more than aluminum, far more than nickel, or maybe lead futures after this bitch in New Mexico tried to pull the thing she pulled. But, you know, don't buy gun stocks, folks. Just buy lead futures. I mean, if you're handicapping a civil war in the United States, I don't know about you, but I'm going long lead futures. And aside from the fact that we don't even smelt any lead in this country anymore, thanks to Obama.
Right.
But
right.
You know, I'll get off that hobby horse. We did talk about an awful lot of gold today, so we should talk a little bit about guns.
Of course. Well, you want to buy bullets, not guns, if you're right, which means
that's what I mean. That's why you go long lead futures, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if I'm the government, I'm not going to regulate guns. I'm just going to fucking buy all the bullets and take them off the market.
Well, what they did was they shut down all they shut down all the lead smelters. That's one. The second thing they did was they tried to put a tax on each individual bullet. Maryland tried that. Well, you can buy it, but it's a $5 tax per bullet. And we're like, yeah, no. Yeah, right. No. Exactly.
That's what they did? Okay. Yeah, no. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they tried that about 10 years ago. That failed. That went over like a Led Zeppelin.
Didn't Homeland Security buy a ton of bullets like that they don't need? Like years ago?
Oh, the IRS was buying bullets. Like Obama was doing this stuff in the second term. They were literally trying to corner the market on bullets in the United States. I'm like, it's a global market for lead, and you know, get over yourself. So
your question about your comment about silver is, we need to keep the COMEX open. Correct. The COMEX serves three purposes. One, as a vault for metal. If we ever get any metal made again here, it's going to go in there until it's bought. Number one. Number two,
We use it for a verification. It's verified. It's been assayed. It's a brand, right? And number three, and this is why the Comex will never close, even if it's empty, because it's a physical exchange, like the Shanghai, even though you can't get your metal anymore. And the price is broadcast globally. And even as the pricing power wanes over time, like, for example, if the world really bifurcates as harshly as it could, which is something that you've been discussing, mm-hmm. well, then the COMEX is the exchange for the G7, yeah. you know, and the Shanghai is the exchange for the BRICS. So it has
or,
to
stay and open. Or Dubai. And or
right.
Dubai.
And or Dubai. Yeah, yeah, no, well, it's like a partnership now. But and that'll go back and forth. Mm-hmm. But to bring it to your point about silver. Right. Look at silver as a straight up industrial metal. Silver is in deficit. There's not enough being made for the demand. And let's assume that demand will continue for solar as well as investment. So what's going on now? Well, what's going on now? And I have evidence that these are dots that I'm reticent to connect yet. But the evidence goes like this. China is importing a lot more silver directly from miners.
Yes.
All right. They're actually remember supply chain. They're importing silver before it's refined. Mm-hmm. Silver powder, not silver powder for solar, silver ore, right? Raw silver ore. And they're doing the refining now. So they're going down the supply chain going, I can't get refined silver, then I'll buy fucking rough silver and I'll refine it. And they're going down. And the manifestation of that in the West is in Latin America, specifically Mexico. This is from a recent report that I read that the lease rates in Mexico for silver are negative. Now, without getting into the mechanics of that, it means the lease rates in Mexican silver go negative when there's less silver available. Mm-hmm. That's because a Mexican pulls his silver out of the ground and he says, I'm not using it this month. I'll lease it to someone who wants it and they'll pay me back in 30 days. So there's your rental process. There's your futures concept, right? Okay, so they do that. But what's happening now is the Mexican company pulls it out of the ground and they go to lease it. No? Oh, China wants to buy it right now at that price? Sure, done. So so the COMEX will, and this is my opinion now, the COMEX will never be a big store of silver. It'll be a toll booth.
Yeah, it'll be a pass-through.
And the only evidence that I can give you of that is when I look at China, I'm looking at silver go up in the Chinese vault and then out. You know, it's like up and out. So it's checking in to China and then it's going somewhere where you'll never see it again. But you have a question behind that, and I'm not sure I understand what it is.
Well, it's just that the COMEX has to be, well, all I was saying was that gold is a monetary metal.
Right.
And aluminum and lead, nickel and all right. copper and all the rest of them, they're right. industrial metals, and they may be important, greater or lesser extent, important to, you know, various strategic functions of the United States, especially if we're getting into, you know, war footing and all the rest of that stuff. But you cannot run a modern supply chain for base commodities that matter in second, third, fourth, and fifth order goods right. if you don't have a working futures.
Oh, okay, right. I get it now.
So the COMEX will survive if only as an industrial metal thing. And what we're doing is we're offloading the gold right. and silver trade, but silver being now an industrial metal, unless we're positing that silver is going to start to reacquire monetary character, which I don't think that's going to happen.
And I think it is, but we'll talk about it another time.
That's fine. I'm happy to do part three on this.
No, I'm not debating you right now. I'm just saying.
Yeah. No, I'm happy to entertain that conversation. So yeah. Silver's the swing metal, right?
It's the swing metal. You're right. It is.
And because of that, that's why you already like kind of answered the question. You did answer the question, which is to say that, look, the Chinese are going out, they're getting, and other, I'm sure they're not the only ones doing it, right. but they're going directly to the producers for this. They're offloading a lot of the cogs for the silver miners who are sitting there going, really? I don't have to refine this shit. I don't have to spend $3 on this. I don't have to buy cyanide. I don't have to pay. I don't have to do any of that. I just have to right. load it on a freaking boat right. and send it out the, you know, normally the Panama right. Canal. And right. okay, like I can do this and that's fine. And this is the bigger problem that what you just discussed actually uncovers, what you just mentioned uncovers, Vince, is the following, which is that the prices are too damn low,
right,
to bring supply back into the market and get the market, because there's plenty of silver out there, but not at $23 an ounce.
Right.
This is the fundamental problem.
I think
silver is probably $40 or $50 an ounce at this point, easily be a clearing price of that. And that's the bigger problem.
Right, right. Let me answer that first. And then I want to circle back to the gold versus silver thing, because you bring up a very important point about gold versus silver in terms of it's above ground, it's not going to disappear.
The big thing is that we don't need a futures market for gold in the same sense as we do for all the other industrial metals.
I totally agree with you.
I know you do.
Let me start with that for the audience. Right, the difference between gold and silver is this: whether you think it's monetary or not. Okay, all right. Gold is not. Forget about the little bit of electronics. Gold is not consumed. All the gold that's ever existed is obtainable. Therefore, gold is, I'm going to use a term of art here, but I'll bring it back to common sense. Gold is a stock commodity, meaning it's there. You don't have to worry about it. It's not consumed. It's not irretrievable. We can always get it back. What does that mean? Gold, the difference between the price of gold now and the price of gold a year from now is interest rates. Only.
Yes.
There's no concern about supply. It's not oil. It's not going to get destroyed. It's not wheat. It's not going to get eaten or killed by some bug. And silver, to contrast it with gold, is industrial. Forget about my monetary opinion. But silver is primarily industrial now, like it was when it was filmed. And as being industrial, yes, you can retrieve it from phones. Yeah, but it's not fucking easy. And the price to make it worthwhile is a lot higher than now. So when you're looking at, and this is the key here, you don't need a futures market for gold, because the price of gold now versus the price of gold later is interest rates. Hey, Tom, I owe you an ounce of gold. Can I give it to you next month? You're like, well, there's no bugs that are going to eat it. It's not going to go into a phone. Yeah, Vince, instead of paying me an ounce, pay me 1.1 ounces. And I go, okay, fine. So I got a month. I find it. I give it to you. If not, you just keep kicking it out and you keep earning interest. Maybe I pay you the interest. Maybe you're a bookie. You are Italian. And eventually what happens is I end up paying the VIG in cash, but I still owe you the ounce of gold, right? Okay. All right. Silver is different.
Right. Silver is a standard commodity where we're trying to build higher order goods with. And because we need higher order goods, we need to have a futures contract so that everybody can have supply certainty. That's what futures are for. And this is part of the problem. This is one of the fundamental problems that Martin's been banging his shoe on the table about this for years as well. Like gold bugs, it's not all evil. The gold futures contract is evil because it was designed to suppress the price of gold. So that's been the big issue for years. And that's breaking down. And you should actually be happy about this. So I'm ecstatic to watch the COMEX gold contract die. So
gold at spot should never be more expensive than gold a year from now. I'm not saying it can't, but it shouldn't stay that way. However, silver can, because I want my silver now. I'm making phones.
Yes.
Phones have to be made. I don't want my silver a year from now. Don't give me this interest rate cost of carry shit. I'm running a business. I need it now. Now, the futures market, and this is why the COMEX can't go shut down, the futures market is necessary because you need to know, it's called a convenience premium. When spot is trading $50 and 1 year out is trading $20, that spread, that negative spread, also called negative carry, is convenience premium. Now, interject, I want to give you what happened with Buffett and silver so you can see exactly why we need a functioning futures market.
Sure.
So should I do it now?
Absolutely. Please do.
Okay. All right. Real simple. Had there not been a futures market, the silver market would have destroyed the producers in 1997. And here's why. And this isn't conjecture. This is what happened. In 1997, Warren Buffett stood for delivery over a time period for a shit ton of silver. Now, who's the sap at the table in that event? It was the producers. The producers were selling futures that they didn't have the metal pulled out of the ground. Mm-hmm. And so when the futures went to spot, they expected the long to be someone like me. So, oh, shit, I don't want delivery, and to get out of it or roll it. But it was Buffett. And Buffett said, I want it. I want it. I want it. And the market was like this. It was spot was trading 450 and 1 year out was trading, let's say, $5. I'm making it up, right? And that 50-cent difference was the cost of money. It was being priced like it was a metal that wasn't in demand. Mm-hmm. The producers in this case were like, they had become lackadaisical. They had been barely profitable. And what they were doing is they were hedging, betting on borrowing silver from someone else to make delivery. And then basically they were robbing Peter to pay Paul. All right. So Buffett says, I want it. Okay. And the producers were like, we don't have it. And so that I was on the floor that day. The market went from 450 to 747. I coincidentally sold the high on the floor that day. Now it went to 747 in the front month from 450. The backs didn't move. So in a normal market like gold, where gold now is gold a year from now, the whole curve goes up and you have an incline, right? Well, what happened was the silver market at spot and the front month future snapped because they wanted it right now. And the reason that happened is because, again, futures market, I have production that's going to be out a year from now. I need to roll that production to spot. So everyone started, I don't want to get too wonky about it, but let's put it this way. Had there not been a functioning silver market, we would not have been able to satisfy Warren Buffett. Now, what happened was Buffett said, I want it. And the exchange just reported to me. The exchange said the producers are going to go under if you take it. And Buffett said, you know what? I'll loan them their own silver back to them for a year. So he's like, I'm taking delivery of 100 million ounces, but I'll loan it back to you and you can give it to me in a year. How did they determine the interest rate for that loan? Well, the interest rate was spot was 747, futures were 450, and that amounted to, at the time, it amounted to a 40% lease rate. So yep. He leased them their own metal back to them for a 40% rate of return. So he got 40% in interest in cash.
Yep.
And then got the silver a year from now. So to give you an idea, had we not had a functioning futures exchange, the spot market would have gone to infinity.
Yep.
There would have been no way to measure what it's worth a year from now. There would have been no functioning free market. That's the role of the free market. So if the free market in COMEX disappears, or the COMEX futures market disappears, and there's no replacement for it, could be in Shanghai. If there's no replacement for it, then you have no way to price future production. If you don't have a way to price future production, and this is key in a capitalist society, then you have no way to secure future resources. If you have no way to secure future resources, how can you guarantee your iPhones next year? How can you keep running? You can't. There's no contract.
There's no function. And so you need a functional aluminum market, copper, cobalt. Yep. Aluminum, tin, all of them, right? Lead, you know, how are we going to stage the Civil War without lead futures? Like, you just can't do it. I mean, I'm kidding, folks, of course, just running a joke out here. But the, you know,
some iron figures.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the thing. And this is why it's important. And so actually offloading gold off the futures market is, it's interesting. It's, look, Vince, it's like,
who cares?
It's really great, because what it's saying is, look, the market is actually becoming less dysfunctional. The gold market is becoming transparent.
Right.
Because it's now going to be housed within GLD. People are going to buy and trade GLD. They're going to speculate on GLD. They can make an options market in GLD. They can do all that stuff. And the amount of gold that GLD has is functionally irrelevant. Yeah, they may turn around and they could naked short it and everything else. But dude, they were running 200-to-1 leverage on the gold market 7 years ago. That's down lower than that now. But at the height of zero bound interest rates, this shit was 200-to-1. I remember when everybody was freaking out and it was 40-to-1. I mean, so, you know, during the early days of the Trump administration, the later days of the of Obama's second, you know, reign of terror, it was 200-1. So now let's think about, so that's been taken care of. I'm going to bring something else in here, which is the following. Remember, I wrote an article about, I don't know, about 9 months ago, talking about the war for the dollar is now dead, is now over. Why? Okay. Because SOFR replaced euro dollars.
The right, that was That was a big moment where a light bulb went off over my head. I'm like, oh yeah, they're fucking getting rid of.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
The two most evil markets in the world in 2022 were the euro dollar futures market and the gold futures market.
Right.
Third is Bitcoin, but that's also taking care of itself.
Right.
So, to your original point, going back to the beginning of the podcast, and you said, where is the market? Or, you know, what determines the market? Where all the volume is. And the volume on the Eurodollars contract dropped off to like a rock as SOFR became the law of the land, and then everything replaced. And I'm gonna name names. A year ago, Jeff Snyder was out there screaming that SOFR doesn't matter because there's no volume. And 6 months later, he looks like an idiot.
Right.
Because then the COMEX ends Eurodollar futures, and yet still we're talking about how the Eurodollar system, you know, that the Fed is powerless in the face of the all-powerful Eurodollar system. I'm like, really? If that's the case, why are we at 5.5% on our way to 5.75? Don't know. Just saying, kind of, just saying, we're not right here. I hate to bust my hand patting myself on the back, but I've taken a lot of heat over this, and I'm trying, and this is all dovetailing to the exact same thing. We've now explained it all in gold. It happened in euro dollar futures, the price
of
dollars.
That's right. That's
it's
right.
The same
Tom.
Thing.
See, people, see, everything, this whole ties in with the mercantilism thing. I'm not going to talk mercantilism, but I'm going to talk about what you're describing. What I've gone on about with gold being repatriated, being protected, is exactly what we did with the financial markets. We're protecting the dollar. We're bringing it back. We're using our own interest rate mechanisms. It's no longer, it's becoming less. Everything, see, it's the whole qui bono, who does it help, who does it hurt?
At the end of the day, we now control our own monetary policy, and we control the domestic flow of gold.
Right.
Which is all the PBOC is trying to do, which is all the Bank of Russia is trying to do, which is all, you know, the Bank of India is trying to do. It's like, this is the world we live in now.
Right. And to give a framework, so people, like, I'm talking about supply chains with gold, you know, from ground to gold. Okay. Well, payment chains are supply chains in reverse.
Right.
I pull the gold out of the ground, it gets sold here. The money goes from him to him to him to him and back here. So as the BRICS, and this is key, it's actually genius if you look at it that way. As the BRICS were protecting their physical commodities and our supply chains were broken, and we have to start digging here, we have to start getting oil domestically, silver from Latin America, the Fed was smartly repatriating our payment chains. Because if the supply chain is broken, then the payment chain is vulnerable to other countries. And so we brought the payment chain back, and we're still doing that. But you know what? I know you love hearing that, but it's fucking true. And the reason that I'm in love with you for saying that, sounds gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but
this whole conversation is nothing but a big gay fest.
Exactly. So. But the reason that you know I'm doing a little light bulb thing here is because I understand that supply chains fragmented and they're getting rebuilt. Onshoring, reshoring, friendshoring, all that shit. Well, payment chains are supply chains in reverse. I give $50 to you, you take the credit, and it goes back to the money goes in reverse. And so what we were doing is we were repatriating the payment chains in anticipation of the supply chains being fragmented and therefore protecting our monetary system, insulating.
Yes. That's no, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And now, and that sets, and that you can't have a re, industrialization of the United States without us controlling our own monetary policy and without controlling our own fiscal policy. And so that's the fight that we're involved in right now. That's the thing that is unsettled, right? And this is why I find what's happening in the markets today absolutely fascinating, because we're reaching another one of those inflection points.
Right.
And I tweet about this stuff all the time. I talk about it all the time. That's why I keep watching credit spreads between, and this is what I was going to ask you about a half an hour ago, which is, okay, so we've discussed what the United States is doing, and we've discussed what China's doing. We know how the Russians are operating. They're now trying to figure out how to build a financial system that doesn't fall apart within 2 days.
Exactly. They have no fucking financial system.
Right. So they're now trying to figure it out. And the main problem with that, of course, is because that's the one aspect of the Russian society that Putin has not completely gotten under control. The real fifth column that's left inside Russia to destroy the Russian society is their banking system.
Yep.
Okay. So Herman Greff at Sberbank, and he hasn't been able to oust those guys. He's been able to get control of oil and, you know, get aluminum and this and all. He's got Rusal.
Very
he's got
warlord type of situation, you know? Very warlord situation in Russia.
Yeah. So, that's the thing. Yeah. So this is the last one. And so them talking about now creating an oil futures, you know, exchange and index, and they want to create and all that stuff. That's great. And what's going to happen is that you're going to see new banks and new financial players get the lion's share of the Russian imprimatur. You know, they're going to get the lion's share of the capital coming from the Russian government, and the existing large banks that have served Europe all these years are going to get left by the wayside. So, that being said, we've talked about Russia, talked about China,
right,
about the United States, to a lesser extent, we can even talk about Dubai and India and Saudi in the Middle East.
Right.
What does Europe do?
Yeah, I know. That's the wild card, right? I mean, okay, so
and
I don't have an answer.
I don't have an answer either.
I'll throw out some possibilities and we can see how they play out.
Sure.
As a whole, Europe fragments. That's where I am. Okay.
I think
so. That's the first thing. The second thing is, as a whole, assuming that they fragment, even if they remain the EU, it's going to be every man for himself. So I look at a country, some countries are going to need more natural resources. Some countries are going to be worried about a monetary, like Germany. I've been watching Germany recently, and I don't know much except to say this. Everything that's happening in Germany is happening in America, but Germany's not doing anything to stem the problem. They're letting their industry leave, whereas we're ring fencing it. And I'm wondering what the hell's going on there. And I don't know at all, except to speculate and say, maybe they're getting ready to be a reserve currency. And so by being a reserve currency, they'll run a trade deficit. I don't know. I'm making that shit up. But
what I'll say is this. Let me jump in here real quick.
No, I'd rather just stop right now and say this to you. I'm more interested in your opinion on Europe because you have a better feel for that than I do.
Right.
I
mean, and that's okay. Fair enough. And thank you. What I'll say is the following. The Germans are a captured pawn. They are a captured pawn either of or of both of what I think are the Anglosphere neoconservatives. That would be the British and the American interests who are running the German economy into the ground. At the same time, the traditional colonialist wing of what I would like to call Davos, they were like the German Greens were brought to power on purpose. They were created and they were not created, but they were fostered by Angela Merkel into specific power within the German government to the point where they control the German government. And they're the ones behind all of this. So now the question is, who's triangulating against whom? It was originally part of this whole Great Reset, which was to destroy the German middle class and to force the world off of hydrocarbons because Europe doesn't produce any hydrocarbons. So they have no collateral for their debt. So now they're running into the real problem. So what did I see this? What did we see a little over a month ago? German auditor says the Bundesbank needs a bailout. The Bundesbank comes out 2 days ago and says the German economy needs a complete and utter overhaul.
Right. So
the thing is exactly what I think. You're right in that the euro cannot survive this.
See, I just want to say this. You cannot ask me any more about Europe. I don't know who the players are, and I want to hear what you have to say. It's
right. I know. I understand that.
Who's the bad guy? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many bad guys. But the reality here is, in my mind, that the euro can't survive because the ECB can't unlimitedly print elastic euros.
Right.
Okay. They can't. All they can do is take debt onto their balance sheet and then issue new ones. I tell people all the time, the ECB can go bankrupt. And as a matter of fact, it's in the process of going bankrupt. It's staring us in the face every day now.
They have no fiscal ability to fucking tax the whole European area.
Exactly.
All they can do is fucking move money around. They tried
through COVID. They tried to like start the process of getting those taxing authorities, and it hasn't really worked. So what they're doing now is they're burning the entirety. What they're doing is they're burning down all opposition to their rule. That's why the invasion of Lampedusa in that little island off the coast of Italy, and Ursula von der Leyen shows up 2 days later to say, oh, look at what we've done, while Giorgia Meloni sits there and literally looks like she's about to throw up
because she's so miserable. I saw that.
Because she's been conquered and she's completely and utterly powerless. That's all they've got at this point, which is that we're just going to keep doing this because I honestly believe it's funny. I've been watching these people for the last couple of months now, and I'm like, do they just live in a bubble that is so insular and it's so insulated from outside information that they do not understand what's happening to them? I know Christine Lagarde is getting it because she looked like she was about to throw up the other day when she was saying this is going to be the last rate hike. I don't know about you, but she just looked. She looked nauseous.
Yeah, like I saw that.
Yeah, and Lagarde, you know, I've seen her look uncomfortable, but I've never seen her uncomfortable like that because she knows that in about 3 or 4 days, Jerome Powell can literally drink every milkshake she's ever conceived
Absolutely.
Of about buying and drinking.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and honestly, he doesn't even need to raise interest rates.
Right.
Because the Russians and the Saudis already fucked Europe by taking another million barrels of production offline, which will hit right at the end of Q4, and they're fucked because now the euro is going to go to 90 cents, and she can't protect either credit spreads or the euro. So,
or the weather.
In my mind, she doesn't even have any ability to sweep all the gold up under one rubric and then create a ring fence around that gold. Why? Right. Because she doesn't even control, because the Europeans don't even control all their gold.
Exactly. They don't. Like, and I remember, in New York, and
some of it's in Frankfurt now.
Right. I don't want to get you off topic, but because that's an important topic. Your point about they don't even control their gold. The central banks of nations, they control their own gold. So
nominally.
Right, exactly. Like they used to be allowed to trade it. They've stopped trading it. The point is, the ECB's power is a full refrigerator of beer. And when everyone's getting along and there's plenty of beer and you open it up and there's one to take out, everyone's happy. But when there's one beer left, the ECB is powerless because now it's Italy versus fucking Germany. And Italy has gotten the short end of the stick starting in COVID. And, you know, I want to like Meloni, but the ECB is trying to extract more value from its satellite countries in order to support whatever ideology it is that they have now. I have no idea anymore.
And the funny part, and the fun part about this is that when you really stop to look at this, Macron is not wrong. The Americans are tearing Europe apart.
That's right.
And they're doing it on purpose. And I absolutely believe it. The question is, which Americans, the ones that are aligned with the freaking Brits who want to get us involved in World War III finish their 300-year hard on about destroying every slob on the planet? Or is it what I would call the counter-revolution centered around the Fed and the banks saying, no, We're not doing this. We've reinvented the gold. We're reindustrializing. We're pulling back on the empire. That's why we're at 5.5% and all of that. And Meloni, I think, is just trying to run out the clock on the EU and hoping that the EU doesn't tear Italy apart between now and then, which is why we're playing a duplicitous game with France in Central Africa. Okay. We're allowing France. We're allowing France to get freaking gutted in Central Africa while we stand by and just go, "Well, that's not our problem." Well, it sucks to be you, doesn't it?
Right. So we're kind of indirectly financially colonizing Europe.
I don't know that that's the case. I think this is more.
I made that up.
I think this is more a case of we're finally just declaring independence.
So it's like a new Monroe Doctrine.
No. It's exactly the opposite of that. It's that, look, we adopted the Brits' foreign policy under Woodrow Wilson.
Right.
And the money that came in to the United States and flooded out of Europe during the sovereign debt crisis of the 20s in Europe, which created the Roaring 20s, which then eventually, when it all rolled out, created the Great Depression. It also built the industrial engine in the United States to fight their war for them fight the British's war against Russia. Remember, I'm now firmly convinced at this point that we fought Britain's war in World War I. We fought it in World War II. And now they're trying to get us to fight the same war in World War III. And all the propaganda has turned to the point of saying now, every neocon that's running for the Republican nomination, which is all of them, are all saying the same thing. Ready? It is of your highest duty as an American to give every ounce of energy that you have to support Ukraine and their noble cause against the evil Putler.
Right.
Well, if this isn't fucking Churchill's, Americans are great people. They always do the right thing after exploring every other opportunity first. If this isn't the third iteration of that bullshit from that fucking son of a bitch, I don't know what is. And this has me really fucking angry because it's so very obvious that that's the friggin' run. That's the plan they're running with. And okay. I'm like, I'm done. Like, I don't, I'm done. Like, you guys get Monty Python, you get Top Gear, and fuck all else as far as
wait, hold on. You're losing me. Okay. I'm genuinely asking, like, I'm one of your audience now. You're saying that in this third, in this, we'll call it the World War III, run up to World War III. I'm just using it as a phrase that Britain is guilting us into supporting them. Yeah. And
that's who the neocons are
from a war.
And we've adopted their foreign policies. The Monroe Doctrine to rebuild Europe was always designed to build Europe up and then knock them down when the time was right. Because the Brits are always triangulating between everybody. They're always
a fucking island nation.
They always do this.
They have no resources. They have nothing.
They always do this. This is what they've been doing their entire free. They're really good at it. It's their superpower.
And
so when you really stop to think about it from that perspective, you know, look, the DOD and the CIA and the State Department are flush through with MI6. It's so very obvious at this point. Right. And so when you look at the way American foreign policy is designed, it's always designed with things that will eventually set the United States at war with the Russians, which has always been the raison d'etre of British foreign policy for the last 300 years. Because go read British doctrinal history, go listen to these people talk. As far as they're concerned, the only other empire on the planet that matters to them, that is potentially capable of, you know, going back, you know, to the height of the British Empire, it was always the Russians that could be the antipode to stop the empire. So when you look at it, it's always, these are the things that are always on the table. So now when you put that together with what you're seeing in the financial markets today, who controlled our monetary policy really? Who helped create the euro dollar markets? Britain, through LIBOR, through the Monroe Doctrine, or through the, not the Monroe Doctrine, through the Marshall Plan. They used the Marshall Plan to recapitalize Europe and build the very Eurodollar markets with a compliant Fed, okay? And they used they used London's debt indexing rate with which to control our monetary policy.
Right, that's the lot, right. And you know, that's actually true. That's actually, I'm gonna talk to you like as a tourist here, but I gotta go in a minute because—
Yeah, so do I.
But to completely approaching this as a layman, the U.S. rebuilt Europe and gave England dominion over Europe via LIBOR and other financial means.
Yes.
Is that a correct
thing? I think that's the best way of dealing with it. And when Thatcher was betrayed by her cabinet to get them into the EU, but they never gave up the pound.
Right. I thought they were brilliant for doing that, but I didn't see.
And they were angry with the English for not giving up the pound.
Of course.
There's a lot more to this than the way I've simplified it. But just at this moment in time, I'm going to bring up another thing to talk about here, which is that this is there was about 20 years ago or so, there was one of the Chinese foreign ministers was, asked at a conference, and he said, I don't remember who said it and when, but it's a kind of an apocryphal thing. He was asked about the French Revolution. He said, what do you think about it? In historical context. And he said, it's too early to tell. American conservatives to say China thinks in terms of centuries and Americans only think in terms of quarters, and this is what we're fighting, and that's why they're the yellow peril, and oh my god, and Steve Bannon does the thing and and then says a bunch of stupid shit, and then Peter Byhan gets more hits on YouTube. Now let's talk about that, about that's the wrong frame for that statement. What do you think about the American Revolution, Tom? I think it's too early to tell because it's been going on for 250 fucking years.
Right.
Because they're
still separating from Europe. Oh, I get it. Yeah. Well, we are Anglophiles. Maybe that's why we keep letting them tell us what to do.
It is what it is. And you can go and you can look at their infiltration of our media and our State Department. And, the CIA is built on the OSS model, which you can look at this stuff and it's not that hard. You just scratch the surface really. The surface and you uncover a Brit every, you can uncover some former British MI6 asset. There are no former intelligence agents. There are just guys that aren't currently on the official payroll. Get over yourself.
Okay. I need to think more. I need to think more about that. But when you made the LIBOR SOFR comment like a year ago, I was like, oh yeah. And you mentioned, early on, you're like, and someone said, there's no volume there. Well, yeah, of course. But the government changed the rules. The Fed changed the rules to make the volume go there. That's what market structure is.
Exactly.
And that's what happened. And I say this in a good way. I'm not a fan of the Fed, but I want to say in a good way, I want to say, well, you know what? On some level, Powell is taking care of American business. Whether he's doing that because he's been told, I doubt it. Certainly not by the Biden administration. Certainly not by the other people in the hall. What's the word? The Davos Junta. I don't know. But what he is doing is he's saying, I want to protect our payment chains. I want to protect the dollar. And I want to protect the economy. And he's going to make a lot of mistakes on the way. But he's a lot better than everyone else.
I mean, and that's the thing. And that's where we have to look at it from this perspective. So what I really enjoyed about this, because I wasn't sure how we were going to go beyond the original thing that with the inciting incident for this podcast, which is what you posted on Friday. And I'm really glad that we were able to tie it back into the replacement of the SOFR futures with over euro dollars and all of that, because now it all makes sense now. And this is the thing, what I've been saying for a long time, and I'll wrap it up here, which is to say this. All of this stuff that we've grown up with, these market structures, we're all allowed to grow up within, and that we've been imprinted with based on the fact that the Fed was a captured pawn, that the Fed was willingly going along with this, led by globalists after Volcker left the stage.
Right. Okay. And to be fair, we had to go global because we weren't manufacturing anymore. But now the global model doesn't work. We better pull the reins in, which is what he's doing.
Right. Yeah. And, you could argue that when everybody was fat and happy, when everybody was making money, everybody was fat and happy. As you said earlier, the fridge is full, and everybody's winning. And the locker room is, especially with a bunch of hockey players, if there's beer in the fridge, the hockey players are happy. And the scoreboard says 6-4. In our favor, everything's good. No one's airing their dirty laundry about who fucked whose wife. And they're not firing the coach. But once that system starts to break down, once you run out of other people's money, to quote Maggie Thatcher, the whole thing starts to break down. And that's where we are. And then mapping the mechanisms by which that breakdown occurs is what we're here for, to try and figure that out in real time.
I almost feel like, and I don't want to, this is another conversation, but based on the frag, I mean, this is like real tinfoil hat stuff, but people talk about it. Based on the events, COVID, Ukraine, that's the second invasion of Ukraine when you think about it. Our reaction to the second invasion, it's almost, and Powell's repatriation of payment chains to counteract supply chains that are broken with the whole LIBOR SOFR thing. I almost feel like China and the U.S. knew what was going on and had to do it. And,
yeah. I am firmly of the opinion that Yi Gang and Jerome Powell are on speaking terms and coordinating policy.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's almost like, you know what? There's a basket of balls at recess. You have your ball in there. It's the orange one. And I have my ball in there. It's a blue one. There's all these balls in there. And we're all like, you know what? I don't want to play with you guys anymore. I'm going to go in the basket and take my ball. And you're going to go in the basket and take your ball. And we're watching each other to make sure we don't screw each other over. But we're all fucking going to neutral corners now. And yep. Europe is like, we don't have a ball. What do we play with?
And what do we play with? And JP Morgan's sitting there going, and we'll be happy to liquefy whatever trades you guys want.
We could lease you a ball.
Talk to each other. We're here as your intermediary, which is why I keep saying that our real Secretary of State is Jamie Dimon.
Oh, yeah. We are a corporatist nation where, what someone said, the corporations run the country, whereas in China, it's the opposite side. The government runs the corporations in China, but it's the same thing. It's a symbiotic relationship.
Absolutely, it is. And until those parts of the system are finally broken down, which is not our story. That is a bigger story, and it's one that I will probably not see. I'm old enough now that I don't think that story is going to be part of my experience. I can see it, and it's out there.
Right.
And Bitcoin may fix it just to throw a bone to those guys. But it's not going to fix it in 2026.
That's right.
Or 2028. It's going to be a long time between now and then. Vince, this has been an absolute blast. As always, we'll do it again. Awesome. Certainly anytime in the near future, because I'm sure
I've got some takeaways.
We got so much to talk about. So
we got some takeaways. I'm walking away from here understanding the LIBOR rejection was a supply chain fixing. I'm looking here that Europe is really fucking powerless. And from our conversation, there's things that I've learned here that deepen my understanding about the whole Europe is a shit show thing.
Anyway. All right. Well, on our way out the door, give everybody your contact stuff, your Substack, all that happy jazz, and we'll go forward.
Sure. It's VBL Gold Fix. So just look up goldfix.com on the internet, and you will be able to sign up for free. Of course, I will keep asking you to subscribe, but sign up for free if you want to do that. If you're inclined to subscribe, whether you sign up for free first or not, I gave a link to Tom. He's probably going to put it in the thing, and it's 30% off for the guns, for the gold guns and goats, folks, for life. If you decide to subscribe, and this will be discussed as well.
Well, we appreciate that. And thank you very much, Vince. So, and as always, you can follow me and Vince, I'm TFL1728 on Twitter. He's Soren Thek, and, we'll do the thing. So Vince, you have a very good night, sir. And we will talk again soon.
Excellent. Always a pleasure, and I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Well, that'll about wrap it up for episode 154 of the Gold, Goats, and Guns podcast. I want to thank my good friend Vince Lanci for a really great and stimulating discussion. We'll be back soon with another one. As always, you can follow me at my blog at tomluongo.me. You can follow me on Twitter at TFL1728. And you can sign up on the Patreon at Patreon.com/GoldGoatsAndGuns, where you can get either the biweekly market reports and or the Gold, Goats, and Guns monthly investment newsletter, where we put together a full portfolio strategy for how you make sense of a world going, well, I wouldn't say slightly mad. I'd say fully mad at this point. So with that said, I'm out. You guys be well. You take care. We'll talk soon. And keep your stick on the ice.